welcome back to It's an Inside Job podcast. I'm your host, Jason Lim. Now, this podcast is dedicated to helping you to help yourself and others to become more mentally and emotionally resilient so you can be better at bouncing back from life's inevitable setbacks. Now, on It's an Inside Job, we decode the science and stories of resilience into practical advice, skills, and strategies that you can use to impact your life and those around you. Now, with that said, let's slip into the stream. Well, welcome back to It's an Inside Job, and I'm your host, Jason Lim. In today's episode, my guest is Atla Vorvik, a dedicated family man, a former elite athlete, and the visionary behind an organization that has made significant impact on society. Atla is a father of two sons and has been happily married to Sigrun for an impressive 36 years. Now, Atla is the founder and creator of MOT, M-O-T, an organization that became one of Norway's most influential and beneficial brands, reaching across four continents. In his earlier years, Atla was not just an entrepreneur, but also an elite athlete, excelling in the world of speed skating. He became a Norwegian champion and represented his country as an Olympian. In 1994, he even achieved the prestigious honor of being ranked among the top eight speed skaters globally. Recognized for his significant contributions to society, Atla received the honorary award from the Norwegian Confederation of Sports in 2015 for spreading values and working diligently with MOT. Today, Atla has transitioned into the role of an entrepreneur, brand builder, and leader developer. His extensive experience has allowed him to foster the growth of individuals, leaders, team spirit, culture, and businesses. Currently, he runs his own business where he helps other organizations strengthen their long-term value, sustainability, and competitiveness. In his public speaking role, he shares his insights on building strong cultures, fostering clear identities, and delivering motivational and energizing communication. So now let's slip into the stream and meet Atla Vorvik. Well, I'd like to welcome Atla Vorvik to the show today. Hello, Atla.
Hello, Jason.
I was wondering, I usually like to start off the conversation by my guests introducing who they are and what they're about and what they do.
I'm a dad for two kids. They are 30 and 28 years old now, two boys, and I'm married with Sigrun. That's the most important part of my life. When I do the lectures, it's because I'm an entrepreneur. Started MOT in 94. Today, it's an organization in several countries. And the most important thing that MOT do is strengthen the robustness to the youth and create inclusive school cultures. I also worked with leaders. So, and I also have a past from the sport, participated in the Olympics in 92 and 94. So that's short.
Yeah, you were a speed skater back in 92, 94, and then you established MOT after finishing your sort of athletic career. What I'd like to do is rewind, start with your history, and then bring it up to the present day. Perhaps we could begin with, what is the reason you started with MOT and M-O-T, which means, I guess, with or inclusive? And maybe you can tell us a little why you started MOT.
I think a kind of motivation is from my childhood, because my dad, he used to work in as a prison officer. And when I was 12 years old, he brought a prisoner home on the Christmas Eve to us. And that was a very strong experience, because I was a bit afraid, scared. And I was wondering, how will our home look like on the day after, because it should be over the night. But I was totally wrong, because this guy was amazing. I was so...
You were moved by his story?
Yeah. When he started talking, I was more eager to talk with him than open the gifts, even I was only 12 years old. And in the beginning, I was a kind of, I should be in his place, because he was so talentful as a child in sport, in music, in school. And I was on the middle or bad in all these three areas. But after a while in this evening, I felt very lucky because I've been so lucky with my parents, mm-hmm. my teachers in the school, and also my classmates. And he had very bad experiments around these things. Mm-hmm. And from that day, I had in mind that the surroundings is so important for people. And also you have to take care of your talent. Today, I know I have a friend, very good friend, that has a more bad grown up than this guy. Mm-hmm. And he is running his own company. He has people working for him, and he take care of people outside of the society. So you can decide your own future, even if you have a bad background. So my philosophy is that people are very vulnerable, and we need each other. We become a product of other people and the surroundings. But on the other side, people are robust and can decide their own future. These two philosophies, they crash in a way, but I guess most people can know them.
You were kind enough to send me your new book, which you've just published in English, called The Power of Resilience. Resilience is related to a plethora of positive outcomes. And for me, it really resonated. As you know, the heart of this conversation on this podcast is sharing stories of resilience. It was a very interesting book because you go quite in depth, but you're very specific. And there's a couple of things that stood out to me. If I may read this, you said from Moltz, there's 12 characteristics of individuals who strengthen their own resilience. And this is on the individual level. As I said, it's positive attitude challenges, the ability to deal with adversity and difficulties. Number three, the ability to deal with prosperity and approval, especially when we succeed. How do we deal with that? The ability to commit to things, a positive passion, self-efficacy, our ability to take control, to take action, right? To make conscious choices, healthy self-esteem, have hope, direction, and goals, and a personal vision for the future. Acceptance of ourselves, to accept themselves, be confident in their values and being by themselves, and to show courage, to live, care, and say no. So you spoke to the prisoner or the convict that your dad brought home one Christmas Eve. And then you also talked about your friend who had even a worse upbringing. What would you say, you know, based on those sort of 12 things that I just read out of your book, what is the difference between your friend and the convict? I mean, they both had terrible upbringings, if I may characterize it like that, but there's two different life stories there.
I'll ask my friend, and what he said, the most important for me was that I had a goal. He had a hope, and that was, I think that's maybe the most important. And he had a kind of growth mindset instead of fixed mindset. So I think my friend, he is very keen on learning from everything. He win over himself, if you understand. So yes. So it's more like that. So you take care of the small victories in the day. I think that's most important.
And part of your book, you also said, you know, that usually the difference between someone who does something with their life or someone who turns to violence, who turns to extremism per se, a lot of that has to have their sense of value, their sense of community, their sense of contribution, their sense of significance in society or even in their neighborhood or their school. I was wondering, mate, could you speak to something about this sense of what drives some people to joining gangs, to creating violence and joining extremism, and someone else who does something positive and constructive with their life to build and contribute to society?
I think our need to belong is so strong. Mm-hmm. We want to be seen. If we have grown up without love, without being seen, we want to start activities or being a part of teams where we can be seen. And that's more important than doing wrong thing.
So it's a sense of belonging. So people will join gangs that feel the sense of community, a sense that they have value, sense that they're respected. Is that what I understand?
Yeah. I think that's the same also with terror. They're recruited because of not the philosophy, that they get a good feeling of belonging in a group and accepting.
What is the pursuit of Mut? Has it changed over the years in helping youth to be integrated, to creating a sense of inclusiveness?
It hasn't changed. It's had more reinforced. I think that's something I'm most proud of when I see the document, the plan we made in 96. It's still the same words. Mut shall be cool, courage to live, courage to care, courage to say no, shall be in. So, and we shall do it through school visits. So we are only have strengthened it. In a way, it feels like we have changed and focus on building a brand so it should be cool for the youth. Today, Mut is in several countries. Mm-hmm. And I think the most important we need to do in Mut, I still say we, because for me and my wife, it's like a third child.
Yes.
It's to recruit the right people. Because now we have the programs, we have the system, but the people, recruiting people that are really, really good and reaching into the youth, that's a really big secret. That they are inspiring, can create magical moment in the classroom and reach into them.
And if we progress to today, now you work with leaderships, you can work with culture or building a great culture in organizations. And I guess a lot of the philosophy working with youth in Mut has carryover to professional organizations. Could you speak to a little of what you do today, how you've carried the philosophy of Mut with you all these years, and as you evolved working with organizations and cultures now?
Yeah, I have a very big passion for creating solid businesses. And to have a solid business, I guess all leaders agree that you need solid leadership and you need solid structure and you need solid culture. And what I am a navigator or a lecturer, a speaker, is about the solid culture. And then it's the same as we worked with youth. It's about the team or the classroom mates and each individual. And when I work with the cultures, I strengthen the individual, build up the resistance to each of them and also the courage, because these two abilities is the most important thing for a human being.
Resilience and courage.
Yeah, I don't reflect about it. I'm sure, because these two things, it's a guarantee for the values and also for action. So strengthen that for each people in the culture is so important. We can talk about teams. And that's very important to have the team spirit, but the team individual in that team. So strengthen each individual with the courage and also lift the enthusiasm and also the ability to execute. That's most important I'm talking about. And also for the team, the power of trust, the power of ownership and responsibility for communication, for each person's own role and development, and also the ownership and responsibility for the whole culture, for the identity to the business. I also talk a lot about and try to implement that they can play, I call it ping pong with inspiration, that you can create a culture with people that are inspiring each other. So for instance, I can say to you, Jason, you inspire me. And you say, oh, no, it's you who are inspiring me. So we we start discussing around that. And that's the dream, creating team that can do that.
That's interesting. As you said, what you know almost as truth from your years of experience as an athlete who has trained at the Olympic level from creating Moot, and now, you know, being a keynote speaker to many, many organizations who want to hear your story and your, not just your philosophy, but the truth that you've experienced. And those two things, when it comes to solid leadership and solid culture, what I hear is two major building blocks for that is resilience and courage. Now, resilience and courage for me is nothing that's given to us. It's something that we have to earn. We have to earn through experience. We need to put ourselves out there in life to experience and to get buffeted around, to get hit around. I mean, if we started with courage, how does someone build courage? I mean, there's a lot of people, especially after COVID, people feel a sense of self-doubt. People feel self-critical. They're not sure about it. What would you say? How does someone build courage, Atla?
Yeah, I think to build resilience and courage, it's like who is coming first of these two things?
The chicken or the egg?
Yeah.
Okay.
But in a way, I think resilience maybe is the foundation also for courage. But I really love courage, so it's hard to say it. But I think even if we're talking about courage or resilience, it's two way you can increase that, and it's what about yourself. Yourself can do it without thinking of others. It's also about the way other people are to us. To create the robustness, the resilience, and the courage, I think it's so important that each individual have hope, feel valuable, and also have a mind that it's okay not always to be okay. And I think learn from everyone and everything. Have a mindset, by working hard, I can almost always reach my goals. Have dreams, goals, and interests. I think today's society, where we have the possibility to have so much likes and response, sometimes I think that decrease the resilience and courage. In a way, I feel lucky that it wasn't these things when I grow up. So I could have a big space for interests, passion, dreams. It was not so many things stealing from that. I think also decide myself that I'm going to handle loads of challenges. I think that mindset, thinking of when I should be stronger as a speed skater, I had to lift loads. I was stronger, and of course it was a pain sometimes. And I think it's important that young people, but also adults, can like that, start trying to like that. And see things in a perspective, not only in yourself, take it outside. I think that's important for building resilience. Remind yourself that you always have a choice. And reinforce a positive view of yourself, thinking all in all, I feel like I'm a good person. I think if we say things like to ourselves, repeat it in our mind, it become
reality.
Reality, yes. And what we say to our kids when they were we started with it when they were 5 and 7 years old, Christian and Johan, when they should go to the school, when they went out the door, we say to them, make your day wonderful for yourself and for others. And we repeated that every day, because then they had a mindset that they should make the day good for themselves and also for others. And it's of course, it's good for others that they treated others in a good way. But it's also a very good thing for strengthening our own courage and resilience. And then as a speaker, I often left menu list on 12 points that they can strengthen their courage. Then I'm talking about don't define yourself and others too hard. Think about that you have a size in yourselves, and the size can grow or reduce. It's up to you. You are not that kind of person. I think that's important.
Just to understand that, so what you're saying is don't come up with a strict definition of yourself, that you are able to adapt and evolve depending upon the situation that you move in, that you can grow, that you can develop, that you can learn, and that the different sides of yourself you can strengthen. So if there's something I find that I don't like about myself, in a sense that maybe I'm not honest enough, I can reduce that and increase the honesty. Or if I find that I don't always take responsibility, I can reduce that and understand that I can take more ownership, that I can take more responsibility. Is this what you mean in your first step of 12?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Good. Thank you, Jason. I think if you ask me, are you an introvert or extrovert? It's hard for me to say that because I think I have both sides in myself, and it's so much about that. And if you say to me, "Oh, you're kind, Atle," in a way, I want to start forsvare,
defense,
yeah. And because I think, yeah, I'm most of that, but sometimes I'm not kind. I need to say thank you, Jason, to that, because that's a side you see. And I think when we help people to see things like that and communicate like that, it's easier to have resilience and courage.
I think that's very important. I mean, a lot of the times, you know, parents are said, don't label your kids. Don't tell them you are good, you are bad, you are smart. But it's better to label the behavior, right? That was a smart thing you did. That was a silly thing you did. Because if you label the behavior, well, that's situational. It's not them. It's not to be. It's not them at heart. And it's easier to change our behavior than it is to change our personal traits, our character traits. Is that what I understand you're saying, right?
Yeah. Second thing is to take care of the small victories in the day. I feel it kind of painful or bad when I hear people say, "Oh no, I haven't had victories in many weeks." And I think all of us have small victories every day, and see them, try to find them. I think that's so important. And I know when I sleep good in the night and maybe have a power nap in the daytime, have surroundings with the people that make me robust, and I have an authority mindset, authority way to speak, these things also help me and help other people to lift the courage and resilience in yourself. When Christian and Johan were kids, I had a very busy days because I was running the mood, but something was very holy for me was in the end of the day when they should go to bed, that I tried almost every evening to be the say goodnight to them and have some minutes
with them,
together with each of them, and then we started a tradition to ask what's the three best of the day, and then they told that, and also we had what's the worst thing today. It was a very good thing for having information for me about the day, and also a reflection for the boys, because it was so easy to them to say, "Nah, nothing." But then they had to. So they prepared. I after a while, they prepared the three things. And suddenly they started, "Do I need to have a worse thing?" And that was very good for the focus to them. And I think that was a kind of exercise. We did it for many years. And I think it helped them to have the resilience what they have today.
I think that's very important what you say. Take care of the small victories during the day. And when you sat down with your sons when they were very young, and you every evening or most evenings when you could, you sat down and you asked them, what are the best three things? What this does, I think it's such a great skill because it habituates them. It creates a habit where they naturally look for the small victories in the day, because you can have a hard day, but sometimes it could be those small things that kind of just light you up, that show that, you know, the day is not just sort of black and white. There's a lot of nuances. There's a lot of great things that happen if you are attentive, if you are aware of those things. So I think that's a great thing. And I think you've gifted your sons with a really good skill as adults to see those things, especially in a hard day. And I'm sure they have hard days like all of us, but then they can pick out those things and that can kind of balance their mood and their, as you said, the narrative, what they tell themselves every day.
Thank you, Jason. An example I have with an old man. I know it had helped young people too, but last summer we had a lunch with a man. He was 75 years old, and he participated in a gathering with me. I made a program for a day through a half year, and he was 65 at that time. Mm. And I met him a couple of times in this year, 10 years. And last summer, he had changed. He was a really different man. Mm. And because 10 years ago, he was a kind of sad man. So I asked him, what has happened to you in these 10 years? And he said, oh, it was that program. You had a pilot. And I said, okay, what was most important? And I said, before you tell me that, what was quality? What was your, scale?
Mm-hmm. Scale.
From 1 to 10, what was your quality of life 10 years ago? Mm. And he said, oh, that was really bad. Maybe between 3 and 4, 3.5, he said. And today I asked him. And he said, almost on the top, between 9 and 10, 9.5. Mm. Okay, so I become very curious and asked him, what has happened? What is the most important? And then he told me, during this program, I had talked about thermostat and thermometer. Mm. And I say to them, you can choose. Do you want to be a thermostat that you can decide the self on and off and the
temperature?
Temperature or a thermometer that other decides? Mm. And then I understood I had been a thermometer my whole life. So I decided to change. So the last 10 years, I have been a thermostat, he said. So I think that's a really good tool for strength, the courage and resilience.
I think that's such a brilliant story because, you know, it was one man sitting in an audience 10 years ago and he was 65. And we think sometimes you can't teach old dogs new tricks, but it just shows you sometimes it could just be one thing we said, one metaphor we share, in this case, thermometer and thermostat. And that metaphor, that one thing that you said, Atla, set him on a completely different course. You kind of shook up his narrative. You shook up how he saw life. You completely created a reframe for him. And obviously, you know, he was just one of a many of audience. But when you met the guy 10 years later, being 75, just because of that one sentence, that metaphor you shared with him, it completely changed the trajectory of his life from 3.5 of quality to whatever, 9.5. And obviously he took on the ownership and the responsibility for himself. But that one thing you said was the catalyst that projected him on a whole new trajectory, a whole new direction. I think that's a great story. And that's honestly, that's something I really strive to do on this podcast by bringing men and women, guests of your caliber on. Because something, just one thing like that you said, that's something I strive for this. Just something to help people to find that change the direction of their life. Not something I say, but something my guests might say or something from the conversation. I love that story. I had to give you some credit, give you some feedback there. I think it's a brilliant, brilliant story.
Thank you, Jason. And like you say, he was an old man. And what he say, I still have a contact with him now. And he say, I'm a living example of late bloomer.
Thank you. So I'd like to do something a little different in this transition. I'd like to take a quote directly from Atle Vårvik's book, The Power of Resilience. He speaks to two major abilities, robustness and resilience. He writes, "The concept of robustness stems from biology, where it denotes a system of ecosystems' ability to maintain or restore its basic functions, or to reemerge in a new form that, after being destroyed or exposed to change, struggles, stress, and other forms of risk. People facing the same kind of adversity and difficulty may have vastly different reactions to their experiences. People who have a lot of robustness will often cope better than those with less robustness. This means that a person with a lot of robustness can handle being exposed to a great level of adversity and still fare well in life." Now, when it comes to the ability of resilience, he writes, "Resilience is a term from psychology. Among other things, the term entails being able to keep a strong mental health despite the stress and strains one may experience, as well as the ability to face, resist, and reorganize one's life in a positive way after going through negative or traumatic events. It also entails the ability to cope with stress, disaster, challenges, crises, and struggles in a positive way. Resilience is about being able to navigate difficult time in one's life well enough. Resilience is what makes us strong even when the world is falling apart around us. By adapting as well as we can when faced with challenges, bad times, failure, loss, trauma, etc. To be resilient does not mean one does not have wounds. Rather, it means that bad experiences can be a source of growth. One is able to accept the pain, and rather than drowning in it, one can choose to learn from it." You know, I would highly recommend anyone to pick up this book. It's a small book, but it's power-packed with a lot of insights, skills, and experiences. So with that said, let's slip into the second half of this conversation, back into the stream with Atle Vårvik.
I see it more and more also for leaders and adults. They are so focused on results and being clever that they don't answer honestly on questions, because they want to be a figure instead of being an integrity and real person. So I think sometimes, very often, you should forget the results and even still work. Maybe you can work harder, but I remember one of the boys, our sons, Johan, he said once, "I'm so glad that you don't have focus on the character grades."
Grades, yes.
Yeah. Then he was in secondary school. And because some of his friends were nervous for coming home, telling about their grades. I felt it very strange, because I felt that we were very strict to our sons. So I was happy, of course, when he said that. And I said, I'm very strict. Yes. But then he said, "That's about to be disciplined.
Disciplined,
and
yes.
Focused." And that's a big difference. So we want them, when they came home from school, they had to do their lessons. And when they did it, no phone, they had to be focused. We that was our expectation to them. But we never talked about grades. And I think that's some of the good things also in the sport. When, of course, you need dream goals or goals. I think that's a very important, because it's so much power in it. But doing the tasks, disciplined and focused, and then the result come as an outcome of that. And I think when thinking like that, your resilience and courage increase. And I think it's so important for leaders to do that, because if leaders do that, they will be good role models for that. And it's easier for in a culture having people that are sincere, because no one is perfect. But we need to trust people. What kind of people you will take in with you in the war?
Yeah.
Of course, you need the people you can trust. You don't need a clever people who always answer the right questions. Mm-hmm. You need the people you can trust. That's a long-term culture building, I think.
What I hear is you need someone who's authentic, genuine, sincere, who understands their strengths, but is also cognizant or aware of his or her weaknesses and how they can contribute, how can they play. As you said before, we don't always show up at our best selves, right? Sometimes we are a shade of ourselves, and it's just to accept that. And I can understand that. For me, that's trust and transparency.
Yeah.
That is the glue that holds teams, families, and organizations together.
Jason?
Yes.
Can I ask you a question?
Please. I'm here.
Yeah. Because I have some role models, several role models that give me strength. And do you have some role models that help you to be resilient and get more courage?
I guess they may actually, they are, I do read a lot. And one of the things I like are the Stoics. And one is Marcus Aurelius. I've read his book about two or three times. And he talks about how we need to take ownership over our minds, how we have to take ownership over our emotions. And that at the end of the day, it's well, like the title of this podcast, it's an inside job. And so Marcus Aurelius and his philosophies is always something I've carried with me. Another gentleman was Viktor Frankl. He wrote a book called Man's Search for Meaning. And he was a Jew who lost his family, grew up in Auschwitz, and not grew up, but he was a prisoner in Auschwitz and such. And he said, at the end of the day, no matter what happens to us, we can assign meaning to things. And I read that when I was 17 or 18, and that has always stayed with me. So, I mean, those are just two men who highly influenced me. Obviously, my father was someone, he was an immigrant came to Canada from England, and, you know, and he was actually Chinese himself. My mom was British, and I saw how he struggled, you know, in those early years to try to make, he sacrificed a lot so my brother and I could have an education, so we could have the freedom, so we could have what we wanted. And I've always respected that. And he's always passed down a lot of philosophies to me. And I've shared some of them on this podcast. And a lot of it comes down to what you're saying, Atla. You know, he used to say, Jason, you know, I've spoken this ad nauseum on this podcast, but he said, every situation you can either succeed or learn. Mm-hmm. I think it comes back to what you said, Atla. When we succeed, is to look at those small victories. And that feeds me. And that's something I've passed down to my twin daughters and my boy. And then also sometimes you're going to say, Jason, you're going to fumble, you're going to fail, you're going to foul up. That doesn't define you. That defines the situation. That defines maybe your behavior. Maybe you didn't put enough effort into it. Fine. Learn from it. Adapt. And then do something with it. And it's okay to feel shit for a day. Mm-hmm. But pick yourself up and move on. So when it comes back to those things, you know, my father, he's passed on now, but you know, he was, I respected him, and my mom passed down some philosophies to me and those two. So I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, good. Thank you. It's inspiring also that you talk about Viktor Frankl, because in 2006, it's almost 20 years ago. Then I had a hard year as a leader. It was a tough year, and then I found a very safety and strength in Viktor Frankl, and also the quote you were talking about, that you can decide your own attitude. No one can take away the attitude you have in your side. And also, when you have a hard time, it's very easy to start being a victim. Or more inside focused, and I don't like that, but still at that time I felt that. And Viktor Frankl says something about that. If you want to be, I didn't think he used the word resilience and courage, but don't think, have an inside focus. Don't think about yourself. Focus on hope. I think people maybe are very different, but for me, and I know for also many other people, having role models like you telling about Jason and have quotes from them, it's a lot of strength in that. So I don't know how many hundred times I have been thinking about Nelson Mandela's quote, I never lose, either I win or learn. And it's so good thinking of that. I really recommend that to people. Find the quotes and role models that give you strength. You don't have to talk about them, but they can be in your heart or in your mind.
And I think role models, they can also become a reframe, because we can sometimes ask ourselves, like I might ask myself, what would my father have done in this situation, right? What would Marcus Aurelius in his, how would he articulate this, right? And so sometimes that allows me, and I know allows many people, to step outside their subjective bubble and to have an objective way of looking at their subjective life, right? And that's what the power of reframing or reappraisal, giving new meaning to our current situation that we find troubling. As you said, to move from victim to victor. And sometimes it may be, as you said, Nelson Mandela in his quote, what would Nelson Mandela make of this? Right. Yeah. I think that's a brilliant, the role play that in our heads, as you said.
And also being grateful. I think that's a very good thing. It's when I say it, it seems so simple, but be a collector of gratefulness instead of urettferdighet.
Injustices.
Yeah, injustices. Yes. So that's a very big difference. What do you want to collect? If you collect gratefulness, you will get more courage and resilience for sure. No doubt.
I think that comes back down to what you said about your sons, right? The little successes that day. What were some of the little successes? Then we can be grateful of those little things, right? Sometimes when I get, you know, at 6:30 in the morning, my cat comes meowing for food, but he sits there beside my bed looking at me, right? And I in a sense, it irritates me because he wakes me up, but I got to get up. But I thinking, you know, this cat comes up, not just for food, at least I tell myself, but for comfort, right? For human company per se, right? But I know it's probably for food. But I try to tell myself it's also, he's like a dog, right? But I agree. I'm going off in a little bit of a tangent here. But yes, I agree with you. Be grateful to see those things in your life that pop out, that stand out.
I think if people ask me, what is the most important you would recommend to being resilience and lift the courage in yourself? I think, I know it's different from person to person, but being passion and goal focused instead of response focused, then you become more solid. That's my experience. And I also have observed when leaders or youth, they become more focused on dreams, on goals, on interest, on passion, what they are passionate about, instead of the response and being clever, what will other people say? They got the inner strength that is so good. So, and I think that's the hard part of this society now, because in a way you need that response, but you don't need it, but you feel you need it.
I think that's what you said. I think at the top of this, it's all the sort of the thumbs up. It's all the likes that we get, and our brains feed off of that dopamine rush. But at the end of the day, it can be kind of superficial. I think at the end of the day, a lot of the appreciations we have we want it to be internally driven, to know that we've done the best effort, that we've done the best job we could under the circumstances, that we play the cards to the best of our ability, and those cards are dealt with us, and we don't have control over what cards are dealt to us, but how can we make the best of that hand that we've been given? Is that what I understand you're communicating, Atla?
Yes. And I hope that we, in Norway, we have We are a really rich country and good things. But sometimes I feel, do we become more vulnerable for that? So I'm very glad, Jason, that we have talked so much about it, how we can the individual can build up his or her courage and resilience, because I think it's 50-50. We need absolutely the surroundings, the people around us to build it up. And I think it's so easy for the group, if you want to help other people to build up their resilience, that we are good at taking people seriously. We are listening to them, showing understanding. And I have very passionate for talking with instead of talking about people. Also be curious, ask and show interest. I think it's so important. I think be trustworthy and that we, from our inner heart, wish people good and
wish them the best.
Yeah, we wish them the best. Yeah, that's right. So I think, and also be sincere. No one is perfect. And I think when we show that most of us, the real Jason, the real Atle, not the 100%, but most of it, it will be a good thing also for others. Because I wrote on LinkedIn, I'm very keen on LinkedIn, eager. And I had a post where I wrote, having a nice self-mirror, you know, mirror?
Like a self-image?
Self-mirror. When you see yourself in a mirror and you see, oh, it's very great. Mm. It doesn't mean that it will be a great self-picture. A mirror picture doesn't mean that it will be a good self.
So the image that you see may not be a reflection of what's going on inside, right?
I think it's so important. Yeah.
Would you say that's one of the most important messages you've communicated on LinkedIn?
Building solid cultures.
Being solid cultures, yeah.
Building solid cultures. And it then often I say being solid cultures, team, and yourself. But I think solid culture have two parts. It's have the team spirit, how you build a team, and how you build yourself. So that's the most important, building up the individual and the team.
And so it's a balance between the me and the we. We have to focus on ourselves, to develop ourselves, to find that resilience, that courage, to take ownership and responsibility, as you said, on one side. And then there's the we, as I understand, is the team, the organization. And this, again, it's about supporting. It's about listening. It's about giving feedback. It's wishing people well. And to understand that when we go into a conflict with a team member sometimes, that the person has the best intention. And the hard conversation we have is about the problem and not so much about the personality. It's to take care of each other. Is that what I'm understanding, this balance between, as you said, the individual and the group?
Yeah, that's right. So if I have been a navigator for your team, Jason, I should be building a really magic culture in your team. I would have asked you and make you responsible for how can you build solid people around you. What can you do to lift the team spirit? And if you say, she or he, I would say, what can you do? Because it's so easy to talk about others. To the rest of the group, I would have said, Jason is a product of you. So how can we as a group lift him to new levels? So he have more achievement to the higher level, that he have ownership to a higher level, that he have more joy to a higher level. What can we do? And they say, but he can do it by himself. And I say, no, I'm asking you. He is a product. So you see, it's give the responsibility to each person and also for their group, 50-50.
Let me bring it back to you personally. What was the best advice you've ever received, if we have not already covered that?
When I was 15 years old, I got a coach I was almost starstruck about. He was a really tough guy. He had been a coach for the national team in Korea, and had also been a coach for Norwegian European champions. And when I got him, every advice he gave me, I took to me. Mm-hmm. And most of it was, of course, in speed skating. But when I was 21 years old, before I met Sigrun, he told me, Atle, the day you're going to find a girl and live with her rest of your life, if it's possible, he said something like that. Find a girl you enjoy eating breakfast with. And I think that was the best advice I have got in my life, because we have been together for 36 years soon, Sigrun and me. And if I have succeeded with a lot of things, and I have never done it without her. And it's so important. So I think that's also for leaders. When you're recruiting to your leader group, what kind of people do you want? A workhorse or a circus horse in your team? And I think workhorses, they are people who you can build a team around. But what more, if I should say something about what maybe have been the biggest, most important for my direction in the life. Of course, I need to say my parents, because they have been very important and give me a lot of drive and safety and believing in that nothing is impossible. But when I was 13 years old, I have just started speed skating. And I've been a member of the sport club for 1 year. And my really, really big role model, Erik Heiden, he was an American speed skater. He took 5 Olympic gold medals in 1980. And he should come to Trondheim in a country match between the Soviet Union, that was at that time, and US and Norway. And they had a training on the Friday evening, and I was watching the US guys were training, and they have a star training. And I saw my really big role model, Erik Heiden, training. There, it was very cold. It was between 20 and 25 degrees minus. So I was almost alone there. And when he was finished the training, he took his clothes under his arm and was walking very quickly to the changing room. And my biggest dream at that moment was to have, of course, his autograph.
Yeah.
And I asked him. I was bad in English also at that time, so I asked, "Hello, Erik, can I please get your autograph?" Of course, he said yes. And then he took my book and wrote a signature. He saw me in the eyes, and I think he understood that I was a really new speed skater, because I had a new jacket with a speed skating
logo,
and said good luck. And what an inspiration! It was so big inspiration. And from that day, I started dreaming about going, representing Norway. And I started training in the morning, 6 o'clock before school, every day. And also during the breakfast, I was thinking, what would Erik Heiden have to breakfast? So he was an inspiration, really inspirational source. And the power inspiration. It was so big. And I thought, if I'm once in the future will be famous and some people want to talk with me or have my autograph, oh, I will be like that. And I realized that this moment maybe was the really very important moment for me to come to the Olympics in 92 and 94. I participated there. And maybe it was because of that small magical moment. And the power of inspiration is so big. And when we started MOOT, we wanted to prevent social society problems like violence and criminality and bad things. But when we made a concept to the solution on the problem, mm-hmm. we didn't talk about the problem. We had focused on it in a positive way. So instead of talking about drugs or mobbing.
Yeah, bullying.
Bullying, yeah. We were talking about courage to say no, courage to care, courage to live by yourself. So we almost never said not or no. We were talking about the positive way. And we have changed the lives to youth, the young people, through inspiration. And that is because of the power of inspiration. And I am a living example of that, and the power of inspiration, what it can do with people. And today we see a lot of young people that now are adults that are saying, thank you for starting MOOT. If not, I maybe not will be here. So Sigrun and me, we are going to South Africa on Thursday. We are having a celebration with MOOT South Africa. We are invited there. And when we meet young people on the other side of the earth, it's really touchy because they really say, MOOT gave me hope, MOOT changed my mind, and everything because of the local MOOT coaches that are inspiring them. So inspiration, the power of inspiration, it's so important.
I think that's a brilliant story because inspiration, the way you've described it, is almost like a feedback loop. You know, you've given in the service of others to take at-risk children, to give them hope, to inspire them to a better future. And then it sounds like, for example, when you go to South Africa later this week and you see and you hear the feedback, that inspires you to want to even do more, to reach out more. As you said, not just to speak to youth, but speak to leaders and organizations and build solid cultures and solid leaderships. Atla, we are coming to the top of the hour, and I've been very, very, very thankful for the time that you've given us today. I have one last question. Is there any advice or suggestion you would like to leave with our listeners today that they can take away with them?
I think... Now I'm working with solid cultures, and I have a very big passion for leadership. And I think what I often see among leaders, they don't need more knowledge. They need more positive energy. And what I got most feedback for advices among leaders is that think about leadership or management, it's a three-part thing. It's about, of course, leading others. It's about leading the business. And it's about leading yourself. And that triangle, have a balance on these three things. I think it's so important. I think that's my advice to leaders. Courage to lead yourself, courage to lead others, courage to lead a magical business.
Well, inspiration is what you've left me with, and I'm very appreciative of the time. Thank you for sending me your book. I found it a brilliant read. I will leave all the links in the show notes for people to grab themselves a copy, which they can find also in Norwegian and in, as well as English and maybe other languages.
Thank you, Jason. It's an honor to participate. So thank you for the invitation.
Well, folks, that was the amazing Atle Vorvik, a former speed skating champion and Olympian, and also the founder and creator of Moot. And currently today, his passions have poured into entrepreneurship, brand building, leadership development, helping to build stronger leaders, stronger organizations, and stronger cultures. Well, Atla, personal thank you from me to you for your generosity of time and sharing your thoughts and your experiences with us today. Well, folks, Atla's book, The Power of Resilience, Resilience is Related to a Plethora of Positive Outcomes. Well, I would highly suggest you pick it up. I will leave the links for the Norwegian and the English version in the show notes. I will also leave the direct links to Atla if you wish to have him as a speaker, a motivator, as a keynote who can address your leaders, your teams, your organizations. Well, here we are, folks. We've crossed the finishing line of yet another episode. If you are inclined to learn more about what I do and what I can contribute with, you can just go simply to mindtalk.no and you can take a few minutes just to explore the website. And if I could also encourage you, I'd really like to hear back from you in the comments, give me feedback if you have any questions, because all of this helps me to constantly improve the show, to expand the conversation, to find fresh and intriguing content. Well, with that said, I think it's time for me to wrap this up. Until next week, the next time we continue this conversation, keep well, keep strong, and we'll speak soon.